Midwifery is the very stuff of life. Every child is conceived in love or lust, and born in pain, followed by joy, or by tragedy and anguish. Every birth is attended by a midwife. She is in the thick of it. She sees it all.
Midwifery is the stuff of life, claims Jenny Wirth, the protagonist of BBC's newest hit show, Call the Midwife. Good morning, it's All Sides with Dan Fisher. Premiering its second season on March 31st, Call the Midwife has won critical acclaim for its remarkably realistic portrayal of childbirth in 1950s London. This realism, of course, is no accident. A whole team of researchers and set designers pitch in to see that no detail is overlooked, including the details of birth itself. One of the show's key advisors is midwife Terry Coates, who teaches the cast how to play their parts convincingly. And she joins us now from London. Welcome to the show, Terry.
Good morning, Anne. Thank you for having me.
So you're the real deal, a midwife and lecturer of 30 years. You've written textbooks and so forth. What was your inclination? What did you think when they asked you to participate in this program?
I have a long history of working with Jennifer Wirth, and I edited her books in the first place. So I edited the clinical aspects of her memoirs, and Jennifer asked for the production team to contact me as a clinical advisor for the script. And that was my initial contact.
So just a clinical advisor for the script meant you read the script to make sure they used the right terminology and so forth?
Yes. And the more advice I gave them, the more questions they seemed to be asking. And then at a point during the script processes, they asked if I could go and work with them doing rehearsals. And having worked with them during rehearsals, they then asked me to attend on the set, so to give advice on the set as well. And the hours that they were asking me to undertake on the set grew, and I did quite a few hours on the first series and attended all the birth scenes for them. And then for the second series, I was there every time there were babies on the set or whenever they were undertaking anything clinical. So my role has grown immensely over the last 2 years.
My guest is Terry Coates. She is teaching the cast how to play their parts convincingly on PBS's newest hit show called The Midwife. It premieres on March 31st on PBS. I should say BBC's Call the Midwife, and it premieres on March 31st on PBS. So your role really expanded. What kind of research did you have to do to keep historical accuracy? What did you want to achieve on that score?
The midwives were working very much on their own in the women's homes. So there was no specialist equipment, and really, they were practicing as I was taught in the early 1980s. We were taught how to deliver babies at home safely with just midwifery attendants. And that was the starting point. I then went back to 1950s textbooks to make sure that the equipment and the way the equipment was used, so basic equipment such as scissors and clamps and the fetal stethoscope, the little ear trumpet, to make sure that all of that was being presented to me as equipment for use on the set, making sure all of that was authentic.
And is all of it, has much changed between the 50s and the 80s?
For things like scissors, clamps, and the ear trumpet, which is actually called a Pinard stethoscope. All of those are exactly the same, although we're far more likely now to have disposable equipment. Then they re-cleaned and re-sterilized all the equipment and took it out again. Very little has changed in that respect. However, on big labor wards, working in hospitals, the change is far more dramatic with pre-packed equipment and the use of fecal monitors. So yes, big changes, but small ones when it comes to childbirth itself.
To our listeners, if you have a question or comment for Terry Coates, the technical director for BBC's Call the Midwife, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.com. Midwifeassist.org. Nowadays, if I know somebody who's having a midwife assist an at-home birth, I know that they'd go to a lot of preparation at home to get ready for it. Did you know much about to what extent new mothers or pregnant women did that in the 50s?
They did what they could. I mean, post-war England, there were a lot of shortages. The community midwives would have taken out a pack containing soft cotton wool, sterile maternity pads, and a pad to put on the bed, and brown paper that had got a tarred surface so that it was waterproof, that was put on the mattress to protect it. And all of that would have been taken out in a box for the new mother. And so the community midwives or the district midwives would have taken those out. These days, the packs are still taken out to new mothers, but we use far more disposable equipment. The mothers would share equipment between the houses, so if they needed a bedpan or a pot for urine during the birth and they didn't have one, they'd ask a neighbour. So there were lots of sharing between friends and neighbours. And the same with baby clothes, they'd be sharing between friends and neighbours and make do and mend, really.
A lot of most women have their babies in hospitals now. Is it the same way in London?
It's the same way in England. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a rising interest in home birth, but still there are very few women who actually see it through and actually have the baby at home. But there are lots of small units where mothers are looked after by midwives and go straight home again. So yeah, I think birth in England or in the United Kingdom is a lot more low-tech than in the States, and we have a lot less recourse to using epidurals. But we still do have an epidural service in maternity units, and we still have access to immediate care of obstetric theatres and obstetricians. But 75% of all births are attended only by a midwife.
And is that something that was going on in England before the war? You said there were a lot of shortages in the 50s. Was there also a shortage of doctors?
Not a shortage of doctors. The tradition of being attended by a midwife just hasn't changed. So women are attended by midwives. Midwives are well qualified, and birth is looked on as a normal and natural process. And as far as we can, it is not medicalized unless there is a reason. So if a woman has a medical condition, then of course she's referred to a doctor.
The show is based, Call the Midwife is based on a memoir written by Jennifer Wirth. You actually wrote an article that inspired her to write her book. What was that article about?
The article was part of some work that I've been doing for a master's degree, and I've been looking at how midwives were perceived in literature, in written English literature. So I used the time to read as widely as I could, and I came to the conclusion that there were very few examples of midwives in literature. And I'd gone from what's considered to be classical literature all the way through to chick lit, and even so, there were very few examples of midwives. And that was a very long essay, some 10,000 words or so. And for the Royal College of Midwives, I pared it down to about 1,500 words and concluded that there was the potential for somebody to write a blockbusting novel, for somebody to write about midwives as they've not been written about before, because childbirth had all aspects of life. It had love and lust and loss and happiness and sadness, birth and death, everything. Everything was there. Midwives saw it all. And Jennifer saw that and took up I put out a challenge. I said somebody could write it, and she took up the challenge and wrote her memoirs.
It's kind of amazing when you think about your role in all of this, isn't it?
It is. It's quite an honour to have been a catalyst for something that's quite so remarkable. To be perfectly honest, what I envisaged was the sort of training that I'd had being written about, and to be honest, Jennifer's experiences were not that different. I trained in an area where we were very rural. The nearest obstetrician was 17 minutes crash call away, and the midwives had to be really, really innovative, and they worked very hard, and the results were good, and the women trusted their midwives. And it was a small rural community hospital, and I think I got a very good training. And the midwives then, in the early 80s, would have been the young, inexperienced midwives like Jennifer Worth and her chums in East End of London. They would have been about the same age at the same time. So I had direct experience of their ideals and the fruits of their experience at that time.
You also care for the newborns on set, as we mentioned earlier. What's it like worth it? I guess working with such an unpredictable population, you're called the baby whisperer?
I think there were certain numbers of the crew that were very anxious about having newborns on the set, and I think they thought that they would cry all the time. And I do have a reputation for being able to calm a baby within moments. So that's how I got the name Baby Whisperer.
And how old are the babies, really? How many are really used in the show?
We ask mothers to bring them in as soon as they're feeling well enough. And usually the babies who are shown as newborns, so for the birth sequences, we try not to have them more than about 5 or 6 days old. So usually they're about 3 or 4 days old, usually about 4 days old.
Birth is not predictable. It's messy. It can be very, very loud, multifaceted. Where do you even begin to advise the actors on how to keep it realistic? How does that work?
It's not as loud as you think it would be, actually. I think one of the
screaming has been over-exaggerated.
Screaming has been phenomenally over-exaggerated because I believe that a lot of people that have portrayed birth in TV dramas and in films have had women screaming because I think that's what they believe they do. If women are screaming, then something's gone wrong. They're not well cared for and something is certainly amiss. I mean, yes, of course, they will let out noise because it effort is involved, but women on the whole don't scream. To get them to make appropriate sounds, it's much more guttural. So if a woman is pushing at the end of her labour, then the sound is much more guttural and from very deep down in her body. And it certainly isn't a high-pitched scream. It's not a horror film.
Do the actresses that you work with tend to instinctually know? I guess before we move on to that, though, what about the midwife, the actresses who play the wives, the roles of the midwives? There has to be a certain reaction in their faces, too, as birth occurs.
Mm.
How do you work with them on that?
I don't work with them at all. Uh-huh. I think that their reactions are purely instinctive. Because we're working with, we work with prosthetic dolls, very, very beautifully modeled as silicon dolls. So we simulate the movements of birth until you need to see a point at which the baby would move, and then the camera is cut, the doll is removed, and the newborn baby is put into place, and then I will apply oil and makeup to the baby to make it look wet and newborn. And I think that the sight of a newborn infant, even if they haven't really delivered a newborn I think it's natural and instinctive. What I do teach the actresses to do is how to position their hands, where to position their hands, and things like how to remember to give eye contact to the mother, that sort of thing.
Of all the characters in the show, is there any one particular midwife that you identify with that reminds you of you when you were young?
I'd hate to say. No, I couldn't possibly say.
Okay. Well, Terry Coates, thanks so much for joining us today. We really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much, Ed. It's been my pleasure.
Terry Coates is the technical director for BBC's Call the Midwife. She's a midwife herself of 30 years, also a lecturer and a textbook author. When we return, we'll talk to a Central Ohio midwife and one of the physicians who works with her. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
It's been 3 months since a gunman opened fire inside Sandy Hook Elementary. For a while, it seemed the country would unify behind the vow never to let it happen again. but turning that commitment into reality has proved a challenge. I'm Tom Gelton. States debate their gun laws, from arming teachers to limiting magazines. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 to 4 here on 89.7 NPR News. And support comes from Ohio Northern University, investing in the success of its students by offering more than $58 million in scholarships and financial aid each year. ONU offers nationally ranked academics and a 92% job placement rate. Junior Explore ONU Day is March 25th. Details at onu.edu. And support comes from the Homeport Nobo on Long Condominiums, offering homeownership opportunities in the King Lincoln District, featuring a diverse community with a mix of historic and newly built homes and condos. Details at homeportohio.org/NOBO on Long. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. That's the theme music from BBC's new hit show, Call the Midwife. It starts its second season on PBS on March 31st. For more information, go to our website at wosu.org/allsides. The show takes place in 1950s London. It's a gritty place where the women depend on midwives to deliver their babies and so much more. That inspired us to examine the state of modern midwifery and how time has and place has affected childbirth. Last segment, we looked at British midwifery practices of the mid-20th century, and now we skip ahead 50 years and across an ocean to modern-day Ohio, where nearly 150,000 babies are born each year. Joining us now is one of the people who plays a role in that, Jaina Newman. She's a certified nurse midwife at Mount Carmel East. Welcome to the show, Jaina.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Dr. Michael Hanninger. He is an OBGYN who practices at Mount Carmel and works closely with midwives. Welcome to the show, Doctor.
Thank you very much.
Jaina, in Ohio, in order to be legally recognized, a midwife must have a nursing certification. That's not true in all states. What does legal recognition like that mean?
Well, I think it's very important. Otherwise we wouldn't be able to practice, so.
Is it special training?
To be a nurse midwife, we do have kind of a dual recognition. We are nurses, and then are trained in midwifery as well. So there are some midwives who are certified midwives who don't have the nursing the nursing background.
And how is it different from the training for a labor and delivery nurse?
We have a master's degree, so a master's of science in nursing and midwifery.
It's kind of like then a nurse practitioner role?
Okay. Yes.
And how long have there been certified nurse midwives in Ohio? How long has it been illegal?
I believe since 1970. Could be wrong on that, but...
Okay. And home birth midwifery...
I'll interject. You are correct. Actually, in Springfield, Ohio in 1970 was the first midwifery program in Ohio.
Oh, yeah. All right. And Dr. Hanninger, how long have you been in practice? Have you been in practice since the 70s? Do you remember the change, or is it since you started, or have you since started your practice?
No, actually, I finished my residency and went into practice in 1977.
So that was pretty early on.
36 years ago. And by the way, my wife is a certified nurse midwife.
Okay. All right. So what difference does it make, in your opinion, as an OBGYN in working with a nurse midwife?
I actually love working with them, number one. Nurse midwives go through extensive training beyond nursing school, which is tough in and of itself. And they are well-trained both in the management antenatally and intrapartum and postpartum for pregnant women. They are very attentive to the desires, the needs of women, ever-present, and just really lovely to work with.
Assuming a delivery is normal, how does the workload break down usually between you and the midwife? And, of course, Gina, go ahead.
I can speak to that at Mount Carmel East. I mean, in my career, I've delivered over 1,000 babies. Here at Mount Carmel East, if a patient comes in and is in labor and, you know, is progressing normally, then we do those births. You know, if there comes a point at which we need help, then we call the physician, whether that's for, you know, vacuum delivery or forceps delivery or for, you know, if the patient needs a C-section.
And so, Dr. Hanninger, does it change your role ultimately very much, not having to be there? I know that doctors kind of just check in anyways until the actual birth.
Well, my role is a little different than the standard physician in that I'm actually employed by the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I am, when I'm on duty, I am here. Mm-hmm. And with regard to the private practices, their physician is not typically here in the hospital during the labor to birth process where the midwife is responsible.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that situation, I serve as the backup for them and for the midwife should there be a problem.
There may be a problem, but it doesn't necessarily have to be associated with the fact that there's been a midwife at the helm. What having a midwife at there, though, if there is a problem, how might that change the outcome? I know every case is different, of course.
That's not going to shouldn't change the outcome. The fact that there's a midwife present. The reality is they're well trained. If they identify the need. For example, to call me, then they will, and I will come in and work with them. It doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to take over the whole process either.
Mm-hmm.
It may be just a collaborative assistance. I jokingly say, as we know, there was the comment, it takes a village to raise a child. Sometimes it takes a village to birth a baby. So we work collaboratively. And that also, by the way, includes other private physicians who don't have midwives. We also at the hospital, I'm here for that purpose as well. And I go back to what I say. I love it when the midwives are here.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm speaking with Jana Newman. She's a certified nurse midwife at Mount Carmel East. Also, Dr. Michael Hanninger. He's an OBGYN at Mount Carmel. If you have any questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Usually, Jana Newman, when there's a midwife involved, an epidural is not, correct?
That is not true.
Okay. Tell us what a lot of people have some misconceptions about it. What are the biggest misconceptions that you would like to address today?
Well, I don't know that you do hear that. There's a lot of misunderstanding in regards to, you know, pain relief options for women if a nurse midwife is taking care of that patient. But that those patients that have a nurse midwife taking care of them have the same options for pain relief that that anybody else does. So, you know, our goal as nurse midwives, you know, the midwife means with woman, so our goal is to be with them and also to support, you know, whatever their needs are and what their desires are for their birth. So, you know, a lot of women do desire pain relief with their labor, and so epidural is an option.
How do you present yourself? Is this an option that's given to women well in advance? Can they decide at the last minute? How does that work at Mount Carmel East?
Well, in my role here, I'm strictly inpatient, so meaning I don't, I'm not working in a clinic or in an office where you can, you know, do some education prior to them arriving at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when they arrive, if they're at a point in their labor where there's still time for an epidural, you know, if that's what they desire, then we try to do what we can to get that for them. If somebody comes in and is, you know, moving along very quickly and, you know, there's a process that you have to go through in order to get an epidural. So some women come in and are just moving along so quickly that they, you know, timing wise aren't able to get one. But if there's time, then we do try to to provide that to
but
them.
Do most women you end up working with plan on having a midwife well in advance?
Well, you know, the women that we take care of here at Mount Carmel East fall into a category of either they haven't received any prenatal care, or maybe they've gotten prenatal care at clinics throughout the city, mm-hmm. or they've received care from a private physician, but that private physician doesn't come to this hospital.
Okay.
So those are that's the population of women that we're taking care of. So
can
they
I
don't.
Can I interject something here,
Dr. Sure. Hanager? Yes.
Yeah, there's actually two different models in place. One is the private practice, where there is a collaboration. They have physicians and midwives working together. In those practices, it is a practice policy. There may be patients who would be better served because of a higher risk of the need for an operative intervention, where the physician would be the primary caregiver, or there may be those with less of that risk, where the midwife would be, and they make that decision amongst themselves, along with the patient, in those private practices. In our model, in the Mount Carmel Health Systems, we have, at one of our hospitals, we have a very active clinic where midwives work and see patients and occasionally do the deliveries. We also have resident physicians that also participate in those deliveries. And then here at Mount Carmel East, we are a referral hospital for family health clinics where women receive their prenatal care outside and come here for delivery. And in those cases, all of those women will be delivered by the midwife,
right,
unless there is a complication that requires the physician's intervention.
Gina Newman, you said the definition of midwife by woman?
Is with woman.
As with woman.
Yeah.
So a man can't be a midwife.
That's not true.
Okay.
That's not true.
Okay.
Actually, I know a few male nurse midwives.
I just wanted to clarify. I wasn't quite sure, but
yeah.
Okay.
In French, by the way, and my wife and I spent 8.5 years in Congo, Africa as missionary doctors. And so the midwife is called a sage femme, a wise woman. She is a woman schooled in the art of childbirth.
An important thing to know. Beth in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome, Beth.
Hi. I have a question. Hold on. My cousin is a midwife, and she's a midwife in Sacramento, California. Her mother had all of her kids at home, and it's very popular. Midwives are so popular at home there that it's really hard to get a job, as a midwife who just practices at home, which is why she's in Sacramento, and they also work with the HMOs and doctors. And I was just curious I heard what you were saying about midwives with the hospital, but is there an interest or a growing interest in having midwives in the home? And I will listen to you off the air.
Thank you, Beth. Any thoughts about that, Jana Newman or Dr. Michael Hanager?
Well, when you look at home birth, 1-2% of all births, I believe, percentage-wise, in the United States, take place at home. It's higher in some European countries. And this is a fairly complicated kind of topic because here's an interesting thing. The most likely day that any human being will die is the day of their birth. The most likely day that any woman will die is the day she gives birth. Now, that's not true necessarily here in the United States. But like I said, I spent 8.5 years in Congo. And when you consider there, for every 100 pregnancies, a woman dies. 1 in 5 children die in their first year of life. And most of those actually die on the first day. It is sometimes a dangerous thing. Fortunately, most of the time not. And fortunately, in the United States, should there be a serious problem, the person can go to the hospital. I had the joy yesterday, actually, of that exactly happening. We had a a lay midwife trying, they were trying to have a birth at home, and it was a breech baby.
Mm-hmm.
And things didn't move along as well as they planned, and came to St. Anne's, actually, in this case, where we delivered the baby without any problem. We want to encourage a cooperation for those ladies who would wish to deliver at home. Don't be worried. If a problem, I mean, what I'm saying by this is there's a certain negativism about hospitals that some people feel, and we want to invite them. If you have any difficulties, please come to us.
Just as you're not judging having the home birth in the first place.
Not at all. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to judge people. I'm here to be present, and our hospital is,
mm-hmm.
to serve the needs of people. And those are many and varied, our clientele, many and varied. So we're not critical of anybody. We're here for them.
We did want to get a lay midwife on the show today, but we could not get anyone who is practicing, currently practicing. So thanks for your comments. Gina Newman, did you know at the outset you wanted to become a midwife and that you were intending to take this extra education on right away?
No, actually... as a young child, I decided that I feel like it was placed on me that I wanted to deliver babies, and so that was I was always encouraged, you know, to go to college, and thought that I would end up going to medical school, but that plan changed. And I had a friend send me some brochures about midwifery, and it was really my goal was I wanted to deliver babies, and so ended up looking into some schools around the country, and Vanderbilt University, this was back in the late 90s, they have a program where you can, I had a bachelor's degree in biology from Taylor University, and then at Vanderbilt, you could go through the nursing curriculum and then straight on into the master's portion. So, being a midwife really has satisfied the goal and the desire to take care of women and to deliver babies.
Dr. Michael Hanninger, we're going to say goodbye to you now, but I thank you for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Dr. Michael Hanninger is an OBGYN at Mount Carmel. Jana Newman, a certified nurse midwife at Mount Carmel East, will stay with us when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, on the 10th anniversary of the start of the Iraq War, we talk with Aaron Glantz of the Center for Investigative Reporting. He arrived in Iraq just after Saddam Hussein fell, but for the past few years, he's been covering the lives of American veterans and investigating why many of them face lengthy delays in receiving disability benefits from the VA. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon. Stay right here in just about 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Tech Tuesday begins on All Sides with Ann Fisher. And it's 29 degrees in downtown Columbus, cloudy skies with some sunshine and a high of 38 degrees. Clear skies tonight, dropping down to a low of 24. Clouds for Wednesday and a high of 35. Mostly cloudy Wednesday night, a low of 19. Support comes from Ohio State's Ross Heart Hospital, helping to build healthy hearts with the 2013 Wellness Series. Heart disease is the leading cause of death in the United States, and regular physical activity is a great way to prevent it. Details about Ohio State's Wellness Series are at go.osu.edu/series. And support for WOSU comes from Edible Columbus, a magazine devoted to culinary tradition, seasonal cooking, and the local food movement in our community. More information on the spring edition, now available, can be found at ediblecolumbus.com. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Season 2 of BBC's Call the Midwife premieres March 31st on WOSU Television. Inspired a show today on midwives. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Still with us is Jana Newman. She's a certified nurse midwife at Mount Carmel East. And joining us in just a few minutes, Pat Burkhart. She's a midwife and president of the New York Association of Licensed Midwives. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Cheryl in Newark, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Am I on the air now?
Yes, you are. Welcome.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to share my experiences. On August 28, 1980, our son, Elliot, was born at home. And I had heard about the organization. Its name was Choice at the time. And I'm struggling to remember what the C stood for, but the rest of the letters stood for Humane Options in Childbirth Experiences. And I remember my head midwife mm-hmm. was Abby. I can't remember her last name, but I sure can see her face.
Mm-hmm.
Our doctor was Peter Howison, and he was practicing in Columbus. And let's see, I went to Peter Howison for the prenatal care, and then he came to the house when I was in labor. And I remember Peter Howison sitting down in the kitchen, and all of us are upstairs, and there was there is no word to describe what it was like for me to have to birth Elliot
mm-hmm.
in a home that I was comfortable in with women surrounding me that I had known for 9 months and respected and appreciated and trusted. And anyway, Peter Howison yelled up the steps and said, "I don't like being down here. What can I do?" And Abby yelled back and she said, well, they asked me and I said, "Sure." And Abby yelled back and said, "Bring your camera." So our doctor was the photographer
okay.
for Elliot's birth. There's just so many
right.
memories I have that I could keep you all day, but it's,
okay.
It was an incredible experience, and I was I'm so grateful.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Cheryl.
Mm-hmm.
Take care.
Okay, thank you.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joining us now is Pat Burkhart. She's a midwife and president of the New York Association of Licensed Midwives. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Good to be here. Thank you.
New York is unique in the nation because the midwives have their own professional board. What's the significance of that?
Well, I think most critically the significance is that in New York State, we have separated midwifery from nursing as an essential connection and have made it stand on its own as its own profession, as it does in England and many other countries around the world. And so that we have it in a situation where by licensure, you are a midwife and you can become to that licensure in a variety of educational pathways. One of which is nursing, but it's not the only pathway to being a licensed midwife. The education, the skills level, all of the qualifications to be licensed are the same for all the midwives who are licensed. It's just they enter the profession through different doorways.
So we have nurse midwives in Ohio that are certified.
Right. And Jana mentioned certified midwives,
mm-hmm.
and she wasn't too sure about them. I am a certified midwife.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I'm a certified midwife as a political statement because I was a certified nurse midwife. And
okay.
I realized a while ago that there is no essential link to nursing, that midwifery needs to stand alone. So if I need to show my nursing credential, I use my nursing credential. I'm an RN, I have a BSN, but I don't need to link it critically to my midwifery credential.
Gina, you heard me say earlier that we weren't able to get a lay midwife to join us on the show today. We tried. Is there conflicts in Ohio that you can speak about?
You know, I don't know that I can speak to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, in our area, I do know, I have several friends who have utilized lay midwives for home births and have had great experiences. So,
So in New York, it's still unique, though. Most states, all states but New York, don't have a professional board like that, don't have the category set up the way they do. Pat Burkhart, well, why do you think that is? I mean, what's the big problem?
Well, part of it is how we all view ourselves, and most critically, and it's as I can envy the UK because it's a small, integrated country. We are 50 states in the United States of America, and state sovereignty when it comes to licensure is very critical. And so every state does it differently, in a sense. Now, there are certainly commonalities among states, and Jana may know this better than I. How many states are midwives, nurse midwives, licensed as advanced practice registered nurses? I think it's 40 some at least. No, Jana?
I would think.
Yeah. Now, there are some compromise situations. New Jersey has midwives under the Board of Medical Examiners. Mm-hmm. There is some Board of Midwifery section out in Utah. There's Rhode Island is just in the process of getting CNMs recognized, but I'm not quite sure under what law. And so the real question is, you know, how do you make the infrastructure suit the profession's requirements? And that becomes a real – now, and the other thing to know, Anne, is that CPM, Certified Professional Midwives, are licensed in over 20 states in the nation. They're closer probably to 25 now. And that's another category by certification, so that just compounds the confusion a little more.
So there's the Certified Nurse Midwife, the Certified Professional Midwife, and
and a Certified Midwife. There are three certification categories, right?
Okay.
And then a lay midwife, I personally have a problem with that phrase because I don't know what it means. It can mean so many different things. It can be an uneducated person. It can be an educated person. I don't know what – I mean, it's a title that just encompasses so much that it just gives you no information to speak of.
We have a note from Edie on Facebook. She wrote, I had a beautiful home birth by choice, a lay midwife group. 21 years ago, but registered nurse midwives and MDs were not allowed to attend for licensure and insurance reasons. My doctor left to go to a state where rules were more progressive. Have these rules changed at all in Ohio? And I would say, no, that is one of the issues, is licensure and insurance issues, right?
Jenna would know that better.
I don't know.
Right.
I would expect part of the problem in our system, because we do not have, number one, we don't have a unified healthcare system. We have a for-profit healthcare system, and so everything is competitive, and whether it's the competition among providers, the competition among health insurers, the competition among malpractice, I mean, our system is so fragmented and fraught with problems because of the way it is set up. So then as providers, we midwives need to figure out how to best get ourselves situated in order to focus on the women, to give them the care they deserve. And in my view, every woman deserves a midwife.
Lindsay in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, and congratulations, Lindsay.
Thank you.
Tell us your story.
Well, I had a home birth just this last Saturday. Had a little boy born at home. He was born at 5'10", with the Born Community Midwives here in Columbus. And I just wanted to call in and recognize that we have a really strong home birth community here in Central Ohio. We have the Born Community Midwives, and they're headed by Audra, who is a certified professional midwife, and she has two apprentice midwives that work with her. And then we also have Choice, which has been mentioned on the show already, and they have six practicing CPMs in their practice with three apprentices as well. It's a wonderful community here in Central Ohio where we have a lot of support.
Lindsay, what made you decide this was the route you wanted to go? I assume this is your first birth?
This is actually my second child.
Okay, all right.
My first child's 20 months old, and we had her at St. Anne's with the certified nurse midwives that practiced with women's contemporary health care. Mm-hmm. So I had a CNM and a student midwife that attended my first birth. And it was a wonderful hospital birth, but it was a hospital birth. My labor was very long. I ended up having a 37-hour labor. And so my wishes for a natural birth were kind of pushed aside by hospital standards. you know, hospital policy, they have to function from a liability perspective because they have to make sure that they take care of a majority of women in a certain standard of care. And so I don't want to say forced or coerced, but I was directed to take Pitocin and ended up having antibiotics and Pitocin during my first labor and just was not happy with that. But it was still a lovely birth. The midwives were very supportive. They were just great care providers, mm-hmm. Emily, Becky, and okay. and everybody at St. Anne's, the certified nurse midwives are great. And they've since moved to OSU with the new midwife program at OSU, which mm-hmm. is awesome. But I just really wanted an unrushed, a peaceful, calm, personalized atmosphere. And that's exactly what we got Saturday. This labor was only 9 hours. My midwives were here for a couple of hours. I had my doula here with me most of the day. A 9-hour labor with no complications, no tearing, no medication. We had him in a birth tub in the middle of our living room, and the baby was perfectly healthy. He's nursing right now, actually.
Okay. You just got it all under control, Lindsay. Yeah. Well, congratulations.
But it was a great experience, and I'm not saying that home birth is for everyone, mm-hmm. but I think everybody should have the opportunity to have a home birth if they want one.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for joining us today, Lindsay.
Thank you.
Take care. Email from Carl and Pat Burkhardt. I don't know if you can address this issue just in general or not. He says, how much cheaper is the midwife than the doctor when you add it all up? Pat, is a midwife necessarily cheaper?
Well, they shouldn't be cheaper in terms of the service they provide, because the bottom line is we should have equal pay for equal service. And if you have an obstetrician doing a low-risk childbirth process, mm-hmm. or you have a midwife doing a low-risk childbirth process, the pay, if you will, for either of those providers should be the same. However, midwives tend to do less interventions. They tend to do less we do the standard of care in terms of what one needs to watch for as a pregnancy evolves and as a labor and birth evolve, but we don't do extra. And in that sense, we are cheaper because we use less resources that have a dollar tag assigned to them.
Mm-hmm.
The real critical thing for most people is how does the birth wind up? And I'm not sure in Ohio if there's differential reimbursement for a cesarean section versus a vaginal birth. In some states there is, in some states there isn't. I'm not sure the Ohio situation. But the bottom line is you are more likely to have a section if you have physician care than you are if you have midwifery care. So that, again, could add to the cost as the evolution occurs.
Any thoughts about that, Jenna?
No, I mean, I agree with her.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree with her. You know, we try to intervene as little as possible, and, you know, in what's considered a normal process.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Pat Burkhardt, why do you think, maybe we've asked this in a couple other ways, but why do you think New York is the only state to go this route? What's the holdup in other states? They're making progress. You said 25 states, you know, have gone to license certified professional midwives. What tends to be the opposition to professionalizing regulating, I guess, midwifery?
Well, I think part of our problem, Anne, is number one, it's the evolution of the profession in the United States. So back in the 70s, there was no certification process, and then there became a certification process. Was instituted by the Trade Organization for Nurse Midwives, which is the American College of Nurse Midwives. Mm-hmm. And then in the late 70s, a certification exam was developed. And then ultimately, the organization that wrote that and manages that spun off as a separate certifying agency. In all of that, we were still very connected to nursing. But as this was evolving in midwifery, nursing was evolving into what they were calling advanced practice nursing. And within the context of advanced practice nurses, there are four categories. There's the nurse practitioner, there's the nurse anesthetist, there's the clinical nurse specialist, and there's the nurse midwife. So nursing kind of pulled us in as part of them because we had nursing as a requirement to become a midwife. And then more evolution occurred over the 80s and the 90s. CPMs became a much more organized and credible group of midwives. They developed a certification process. They now have licensure, as I said, in about 25 states. So now we have midwives who were nurses that are pretty much being part of the nursing side of states, and midwives who are slightly different because they're not nurses, and their education process can vary a little bit, and that is part of our issues. And then we have the CM, the midwife that the American College of Nurse Midwife created to basically show that you don't have to be a nurse to be a midwife. But when states were evolving their laws, CNMs, by definition, kind of just became part of the advanced practice registered nursing process. And I don't know that a lot of nurse midwives in states have any problem with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's all that we have time for today. Probably a conversation for the future as well. Pat Burkhart, president of New York State Association of Licensed Midwives, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Jana Newman, certified nurse midwife at Mount Carmel East. Jana, thanks so much for staying with us today.
Thank you, Anne.
And a reminder, season two of BBC's Call the Midwife premieres March 31st on WOSU television. If you want to check more out about that, go to the link at our website at wosu.org/allsides. Thanks so much for joining us today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.